Max Hall and Melbourne Football Club. You're listening to the Coaches Panel.
This is Nat Fyfe from the Fremantle Footy Club.
Trent Cotchin from the Richmond Footy Club.
Scott Benderbury from the Collingwood Football Club. You're listening to the Coaches Panel.
Patrick Cooch from the Carlton Footy Club.
It's Rory Sloane here from the Adelaide Crows.
This is Tom Mitchell. You're listening to the Coaches Panel.
It's pretty rare in your second season of AFL football you break out and legitimately come into premium scoring territories. It's reserved for the likes of Jackson McRae, Nat Fyfe, Clayton Oliver, Nick Dacos, and in 2023, Nazaia Wanganeen-Miller, at the very least in AFL Fantasy and Dream Team, hit that premium tier level. But has he got another gear to go to join that territory in Supercoach? We're going to talk about that on today's episode of the 50 Most Relevant. Hey, it's MJ from the Coaches Panel. I hope you all thank you so much for tuning in for another episode every single day, unpacking who I think are the most important and relevant players to have conversations as we enter into the 2024 fantasy footy season. Already this preseason, we've done a number of collaborations with some of our favorite content creators from the fantasy footy community. And then after the back of recording with this particular guest, he's like, oh, if this person happens to sneak into the 50, MJ, I want to have a chat about Nazaia. It's great to have Hef from the Keeper League podcast back on, mate. Good to see you. And you're keen to talk about Naz on this episode.
Yeah, just, we'll talk about second year breakouts and things like that and all the numbers that kind of make him truly amazing. And we were talking before the show that someone like Nick Dacos, he kind of gets overshadowed by in this, but his numbers were truly remarkable last season. But I think he's a player that we're not surprised that this actually happened, given his underage scoring, his first season, played a lot of footy in his first year. Saints were obviously invested a lot of time into him. And to be put in the halfback line, get off that wing, back to the halfback line this year. It's been pretty amazing to see how well he scored last year and the type of player he became. And yeah, like you said in the intro, he's become premium status essentially. And he's a really interesting one to think about for our teams, because I don't think he's in a lot of teams at the moment, but he could be a unique pick. But we'll unpack what we think of him in this show, I think.
We certainly will. If we look into some of the data from 2023 in Supercoach, he had that average of 85.1, 6 tons in that format, a career and personal high score with a 119 from that 2023 season. Means he's priced in that format just under, 480,000. He's just a clip under that. While in AFL Fantasy and Dream Team, certainly the formats that he's performed at his strongest point up until this period of time, he's coming off the back of a 91.3 seasonal average, double digit tons, 130 is a season and a career high score. And in those two formats, he's priced at 824,000 in AFL Fantasy and just a couple of grand short in 850,000. Hef, we'll dive into his scoring and the trends, and there's a bunch of different analytics. I know we want to get into some of the breakout trends. That's what one of the great things that the Keeper League podcast bring to the community is helping us unpack the early pathways of these players before they hit this tier level where it's like, they're brilliant, jog on. They're going to be a premium jog on. You and your team are so brilliant at doing that. But just from a pure football sense, he's one of these players that we just enjoy watching. Sublimely skilled player. Rarely makes a bad decision with the ball in hand. Finds ways of opening up the ground for his St Kilda teammates and taking on the game in such a way that unless you're playing against him or supporting the team against him, you just gasp at how brilliantly smart and clever he is. It really is no surprise that Ross Lyon takes over the coaching reins and goes, you know what? I need a key mover of the ball, a smart user of the ball, and a high football IQ player. And Nazaia is just tick, tick, tick when it comes to all of those areas of football.
Yeah, 100%. Like that, his boot, like his right leg, geez, like it's just an amazing kick off that halfback line. It's the type of kick that so many teams wish they had off that halfback line. That kind of clear distributor, hits targets, sets up attacks, but also got a bit of, you know, dash and evasiveness. Composure he has himself, and he's just got a good brain like on his shoulders as well, a good head on his shoulders, makes good decisions when he's got the ball in hand. So pure football, he's an absolute gun in the making. Probably does need to work on strength and any kind of inside game, maybe that could be somewhere he does improve. But at this point in time, for what the role he's playing at St Kilda, he suits it perfectly, and he's absolutely dominating off that halfback line.
He certainly is. He's seventh in the AFL last year for kicks per game. So as you said, the Saints love to get the ball in his hands because he's rarely letting them down by foot when he does execute. From an AFL fantasy perspective, and certainly at this point in time of his career, he's leaning towards greater performance, which is interesting given we've just gone on over the past few minutes about how good of a user that he is. So maybe there's a pathway of increased scoring there for us. But 13th for all defenders by averages last year, 8th for points. But it really was Heffers. The season went on. He went from, okay, this guy's scoring nicely as a second-year player to really elevating himself. Pre-buy is going at a more than respectable 83.9 in AFL fantasy. Takes that to 98 after the buy as well. In Supercoach, 92 is what he delivers post-buy. Pre-buy is 77.3. So we're seeing this guy certainly as the season trends on, his scoring continue to get better. In wins, he's a significantly better performer. In Supercoach, it's negligible, but in AFL fantasy, it's up to nearly 10 points per game. So the trends are strong and nice for us, but this is an area of your specialty for the fantasy football community is tracking and trending players' breakout pathways. What are we seeing about where he's at in his development and where is he as a second to third year player? Is he tracking right where we want him? Are there some alarming data trends or are there some things that we should be getting really excited about?
There's some things we should definitely be really excited. And there's also some things that are not really related to Nezihah Wanganeen-Miller per se, but more so about players of his caliber that have started their careers in this way. There might be some worrying signs there, but it all depends on where you view him in terms of his development and what sort of player he's going to be. So in the lead up to this this podcast, I thought it'd be fun to do some analysis on second year breakouts versus third year breakouts and trends that tend to happen across the competition for players that do break out in their second year as opposed to their third year. Now on our podcast, we've had this argument. When I was working with Doss and Kays every week, we would have this bit of a running argument where Doss believed that the second year breakout was more of a thing, where Kays was saying third year breakout is clearly the thing. So I think there were some different metrics used to classify that. I think Dossie was more about he saw the biggest rise in points in their second year. But I think a lot of the time you're talking about players going from averaging 35 to 65 and seeing a 30-point upside, where in their third year they go from averaging 65 to 85, which is only 20-point upside. But it's when you start to actually consider them a good fantasy scorer once they hit that 80 mark, I think anyway, 80 to 85 mark. So that's a metric I use. When do players most often get to that 80 to 85 mark? Is it their first year, their second year, or their third year? So basically, from the numbers I've looked at, and this is – There's a few disclaimers. It's only players that are currently in the competition I've looked at. So I haven't looked at past ones just because it's hard to get a reliable data source of the year they were drafted, the year they debuted. It's hard to kind of pull all that out of the system. So that's all in the AFL website. So I've pulled that out, had a look at that. So that's one of the disclaimers there essentially. And it's only for players drafted after 2012 as well, because that's as far as the AFL website's data goes back to as well. So that's a couple of disclaimers there. But in the period, the people that match that, the players that match that kind of criteria, 14 players have broken out in their first year. So since 2012, 14 players have averaged over 80 in their first year. And you could probably go through and think of a few of those, your Harry Sheezels, Nick Dacos, your Michael Barlows, all that sort of stuff. 25 players have averaged over 80 in their second year. So they've averaged over 80 for the first time, that is, in their second year. And 31 players have averaged 80 plus for the first time in their third year. So from those numbers, the third year breakout is the most likely because it's the highest number of players that have kind of reached that point in their third year for the first time. So when it comes to second year breakouts, there is 25 players currently in the competition that have done it. And it's not including Nezihah, but there's some pretty illustrious company there. So, you've got players like Jack McRae, obviously, Marcus Bontempelli, Took Miller, Zach Merritt. There's some good names in there. But you've also got players like James Warple. You've also got Jaden Stevenson in there. You've got Sam Berry. there's kind of yin and yang in there in terms of how they go from their second year. So I decided to have a bit of a look at where players go from their second year to their third year. So this is the players that break out in their second year. How do they tend to go in their third year? And it's kind of interesting. So out of those players, those 25 players I mentioned before, 14 of them average less the following year and 11 of them average more. So it's not too much of a split, but on average, players tend to regress by about 2 points if they break out in the second year to their third year. So that's the overall trend. But it's kind of dependent on the type of player, because you've got players like Bont in there, you've got McRae in there, you've got some absolute superstars that are kind of midfielders, your guns in there. So what I decided to do is have a look, bit of a look at the halfback flanker types that fall into this category. The similar type of numbers that are players that are similar to Nzaiwe Wenger and Miller. So from there, the only real players in there are Caleb Daniel, Ryan Burton, Mason Redmond, and Alex Witherden. So out of the halfback flankers, from those guys, if you average out their second year to third year, they go backwards about 13 points.
Wow.
From their second year to third year. So again, you got to take all this with a pinch of salt. It's not saying that this is 100% going to happen to Naz, but a lot of the times players that break out in their second year do struggle to back it up in their third year, or they plateau more than anything. They don't seem to go again until a couple of years later. They kind of hit this mark early, which I think is what more the data suggests. They might hit this mark early and then they don't really improve on that for maybe a season or two from there. And it's kind of what I'm expecting from Nzaiwe Wenger and Miller, not even just from a data sense, but from probably a Saints football sense as well, to be honest. Like, Saints were a really fantasy friendly team last year.
Very much so. Yeah.
And I don't know if that will continue under Ross Lyon, just from what we've seen in the past. You can kind of see with the way they recruited, like Paddy Dow, they brought in some more contested players. And then you're obviously going to have, you're going to have younger players like Winhager, Philippou, Owens as well, that are probably going to spend more time in the midfield. And you say, well, what does this have to do with Nzaiwe Wenger and Miller? Well, it's probably got more to do with Jack Sinclair, if correct, anything, yeah, and could push him back to defense a little more. You mentioned earlier that his numbers saw a bit of a rise in the second half of the season, but it kind of correlates with Sinclair starting to spend more time in the midfield. Like, you look at round 11, 61% in there, round 15, 68% in there, 16, 39%, 40% after that. Sinclair started to kind of spend a little bit more time in the midfield at this point. And in the second half of the season, the last kind of six games, Sinclair was out of the midfield a lot more. I don't know if that is a direct correlation to Wenger and Miller's scoring. I'm not sure what he scored over the last five games, but that's just noticing some CBA trends and maybe the way that St. Kilda might be playing across, you know, what they're planning for the future as well. So just something to think about with that. One thing that I'm really kind of excited about, and it's kind of this fear I always have of a player like Nzaiwe Wenger and Miller, is he's going to end up back on the wing, which would be brutal for fantasy scores. But the way Saints have recruited Liam Henry, there's a draftee they brought in, I can't remember his name, but he's also an outside type as well. It looks like they're going to persist with him in the halfback line. So that's a positive thing there. But I think, yeah, like I was kind of alluding to, it's not going to be really dependent on Nzaiwe. It's going to be dependent on the way the Saints go play going forward. Yeah. And also probably a little bit what happens with Jack Sinclair and where he plays this year also. That's my thoughts.
Yeah, I think those pieces around him probably give us ultimately a lot of indications about where he is and what happens. Even just something simple as the way he plays as an outside player, it should come as no surprise to us, both in the style of play and the frequency of games they play. He performs much stronger at Marvel Stadium than anywhere else consistently. And even if you just want to look at the base level data, they played two games in the first seven rounds at Marvel Stadium. Whereas from after their bye, and I mean the round bye at the back, not they've got none of those early ones. They've got one game that's not at Marvel Stadium, and that's at Adelaide Oval. I've got this beautiful stretch. So really what you should be using data, and again, Hef, you're so great, and there's plenty of great people we've talked about, Jaden Popowski over this 50 Most Relevant series and others that are brilliant at bringing data to the community and then giving an element of narrative, but then being so great at going, A plus B doesn't always equal C, but you've got to understand the game, understand the dynamics, and also know that the data is historical and it can change and evolve and grow. Like you said, just because history says second year players either regress or kind of hold where they're at, the average, doesn't mean that he can't. Equally, doesn't mean that he will. Everything is unique and different and holds those things through there. For someone that was bullish on Nzaiwe, whether they see the scores in wins versus losses, they see the Marvel trend, they see what he did at the back end of the year, can you talk us through what's the mindset of a coach structurally to why they would lean into him? I think it's more AFL fantasy. You'd have confidence in that and dream team rather than super coach.
Yeah, 100%.
You're projecting like a 20 points per game jump straight out, and that his disposal efficiency and his volume really pops, which All for that, but that's where it is. Yeah. What's the ideology you're heading to from a team structural perspective?
Well, first of all, I guess the first and foremost thing you got to look at this year is buy structure, really. And so he's a good player for that. The St Kilda are a good team for that because they don't have one of those early buyers. But like in his price range, like we talked about it before, Hayden Young's a very similar price. Yep. And the way you have to structure your team, you can only probably have one player around that price anyway. Like there's like, obviously you can have more, but at the same time, like if you're going to go like a premium target, like, you know, Nick Dacos is the name on everyone's lips, but he's got that early buy as well. So I kind of feel like you're sometimes flipping up between Jack Sinclair and Nazai Wanganeen-Miller for that spot in your side if you actually wanted him as well. And then Hayden Young there as well. And obviously which one offers the best value and which is going to have the most upside out of those. And I think the obvious answer is Hayden Young there to have the most upside. So like looking at my side, like I've got room for a Primo and then basically Hayden Young in my structure. And then if I was going to pick one of those two, like if I was going to pick anyone probably for my D1 at the moment, it probably is going to be Jack Sinclair, I reckon. Yeah. Either him or maybe Tom Stewart as well, because I just need to see what that role is going to look like in the preseason and see if he is playing some more midfield time and stuff like that. Yeah. And then, you're probably going to be tossing up between someone like to fit him into your structure before you kind of go into your Winhagers, your Zach Williams, your that sort of stuff. You're probably looking at... you're probably looking at either choosing between Hayden Young and Nazai Wanganeen-Miller, I think, at that price range. And I think the no-brainer is Hayden Young. So it's tricky. Like, I'm not trying to discredit the guy. I think he's a great player, but I just don't think the upside is there at the moment. I think it's like we all know AFL fantasy, it's a money game. Yes. And I just don't know if he's going to have the cash rise. I got no doubt he averages like similar to what he averages last year. Like he goes in those, you know, that high 80 kind of range that he can do that next season. But like in terms of that, I just don't know if he pushes his game to that next level to make you the cash, to make you the value as some of the other players are in that back line to do that for you.
What people do at D1, is it Nick Dacos? Is it Jack Sinclair? Is it Tom Stewart? Yeah. Is it James Sicily? Is it a Lockie Whitfield? Like, this determines so much of your compounding structural pieces of your defensive line, especially when you're thinking at guys like, is it a Nick Caulfield? Is it a Marty Hoare? Is it a Dan Curtin on field? Is it a Zach Williams? Like, all of a sudden it's like, how am I wanting to structure this up? And it's the beauty of the game is everyone sees a Nick Dacos, for example, I go, he's the best defender in the line. I want him for the whole season. Okay, that's fine with that logic. Depending on the formats you play, there's all different nuances. Okay, well, that impacts now. Can you afford a Sinclair? Well, you probably can't do that and be bullish on a Hayden Young and be bullish on the upside and of a desire. And a desire, it's like, well, can you pick him over a Hayden Young with the ownership, with the certainty of role, with an even better buy structure that helps you through in an arguably better fixture and scoring pathway? This is where it starts to become about how you rank players and structures and what it does, not just in a defensive line. Now it opens up other lines. It's, are you going that set and forget ruck and going, I'm going a Young at D1, stuff Dacos. I want to spend my money there. I have no interest in a Cherry or a Grundy. This is where the fun part of the community gets to play around and using January and February wisely with, I'm just going to try a bunch of different structures, a bunch of different look and feels, and just see what it looks like. Because I'm with you. I think those elements ultimately inform what we do and where we go. Is there a pathway for Nazai Wanganeen-Miller to become an even stronger premium performer in AFL Fantasy, Dream Team and Supercoach? Yeah, there is. He's shown at Marvel Stadium in wins and in the back half of last year, he's got a ceiling that's strong enough for us that if that floor can pick up just marginally, he's as good as a top 10 defender as we can expect. Is there also a pathway, as Hef has alluded to us, that, you know what? There are some gaps here. There is some evolution of this St Kilda midfield, and there are some dynamics we don't yet know. Absolutely. But either way, we've got to seriously consider him as a starting or as an upgrade option.
You did mention upside, and I did come up with one kind of interesting stat that could see some upside. And it's a very simple one. But he took 100 kick-ins for the season. Sinclair took 89. So pretty similar average to the two. But what was interesting about Nazai is that 20% of the time he didn't leave the goal square.
Wow.
So out of those, I think only 80 kick-ins were play on out of the 100. So there is some upside there per game. Like if he probably can put on a little bit there if he decides to. And I think maybe just backs his leg from wherever he is, he can kick off one step and that's the kind of player he is type thing. And he get the ball moving quickly and all that sort of stuff. But that's just one interesting thing I saw, that he tended to not play on as much as someone like Sinclair did throughout the year as well. But in terms of kick-in, so we saw like the trend in the last few games, and I just had a quick look at the scores, and he did actually regress probably a little bit from that big period in the middle towards the end. Not by much. Like, you know, he's still scoring.
I think he had 90 odd across the formats. Yeah.
And a couple of 70s in there, but then he had still backed up with 120 in between, I think, as well. So, yeah, there's a few games where you still get off the leash, whatever. It's hard to pick what the reason for that is. Could have just been, you know, had an extra Weet-Bix that day and he was feeling better. but yeah, so over the last three games, the trend was towards Sinclair taking more kick-ins. I think Sinclair was two kick-ins up on his season average of 4 over the last three rounds, I think it was, as well. So that's just another thing to think about. But yeah, throughout the year, he probably could have kicked in more and played on more and, you know, scored more points from kick-ins. So if he does that more, there could be upsides. It's just a very simple thing. But yeah, who knows?
That's the beauty of Nazari. He's so close to elevating himself to that next tier. All it takes is one or two things to break his way, as you've mentioned, the kick-in here or there, the mandation of Sinclair to stay out of that halfback role and the monopoly of the play through him. He's there in AFL fantasy and with Supercoach as the team improves as a unit, as his just confidence in his body and footy IQ only further grows to new levels. He can push that 100. Is he relevant as a starting squad option? Yeah, he is. Is he someone that I'm leaning towards more fading as a starting player? Yeah, I think it is. But it's not about Nazaire. Rather, it's about the other options and variations of how I want to structure up my side. That means I'm going to target him as an upgrade. Because if the Marvel thing is true, and that's a big premise, but if the Marvel scoring trend is true, I'm going to want every single piece of that post the Saints bye at the end, where it is just Marvel Stadium galore for Nazaire Wanganeen Millera. Any last comments before we jump into draft rankings about Naz?
No, that's exactly what I was alluding to, because once we look at draft, it becomes a bit of a different ball game when we're talking about players like Hayden Young and or, you know, the players that are around him as well. So now that's what I was about to allude to. And I've actually got it's a great segue. We're getting really good at doing this, but Keeper League defender rankings coming out this week on our website. And I just want to talk about where I ranked Nazaire Wanganeen Millera on those. And I've got him ahead of Hayden Young in my rankings there. I've got him as my 5th ranked defender I would take in a startup Keeper League draft. I've got Nick Dacos, Juan Sinclair, Sheezel, which I'm still not 100% sure. I think I might have him a little bit high there. And then James Sicily, and then Nazaire Wanganeen Millera in 5. And the reasoning is because I see Hayden Young as a mid only next year, which is going to kill you in your keeper leagues. And so Naz is probably the more likely candidate to keep his defender status. But that's the thing. Like, you talk about classic and so much of it isn't actually about the player. It's about the game, you know?
Correct.
And so So when you look at Naz, like, that's why I kind of found it hard to even like think about what to say about him, because just every aspect of this kid, I just love. Like, love the way he goes about it. I love how silky he is. I love the run. I love his composure. Like, everything about him just screams like a good footballer, you know?
Yeah.
So in your drafts, like, I don't think you can rank him high enough, to be honest. Like, you got your Dacos, your Sinclairs, all those kind of guys. I think Sheezel probably picks up 4 status again and plays through the midfield. So that's why I'm kind of umming and ahhing where to have him in there. So Nazaire Wanganeen Millera, I've got him in my top 5. Look at the mock draft simulator as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask
him that. ADP, he's going at 25th overall.
In a brand new keeper league. Yeah, wow.
Yep. And so he's down a little bit. So he's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7th overall for the defenders behind Luke Ryan. 1 point behind Luke Ryan. And then Hayden Young, Sicily, Sinclair, Sheezel, Dacos above him. So that's what the users are thinking on the site when they're drafting their new keeper leagues. But yeah, just interesting numbers there that, again, he's well inside that top 10 for the future of keeper leagues. And personally, I think he should be higher, and he probably will be getting into that top 5 range by the time the season starts, I think, as well.
Yeah, in the offseason, Kane and myself put together our top 50 keeper ranks and tiered out players, and Nzaia was one of our most highly desired targets for you to go and get in a keeper league for some of those points that you've just alluded to, that combination of age, role security, and the development trend of scoring right there. Gosh, unless you get Nick Dacos, or I'm pretty happy to get in line and get a Nzaia, Wanganeen, Miller pretty soon in a keeper league. In a classic format, is he relevant? Yes. In a draft format, is he relevant? Yes. In a single season draft, look, he's going to go in that D1 spot in an AFL fantasy and dream team league. People are going to see that average. They're going to see those trends. They're going to see those amount of games played for a player that's only two seasons deep and go, you know what? I'm going to want a piece of that. While in Supercoach, he's a little bit further back behind, given he's in that sort of mid-80s average, and the defenders can often reach 110 with relative ease in frequency in contrast to AFL fantasy. I think he's probably going to go in that D3 spot, but you could get the upside of a D2 and get a 95-plus performer that could really touch the edges of 100 if things really go his way. But Nzaia, a fascinating and a fun player to look at. If he's not on your starting squad target, I actually understand that. It might take an injury to a player to really change your mind, but I understand that. But if you're not considering him as a serious upgrade target during the year, you're probably missing a trick. Hef, it's a pleasure to chat to you about all things fantasy footy again. Remind us where we can find you on social media and some of the great tools that the Keeper League podcast are releasing at the moment.
You can find me personally on X at Hef_KL. At Keeper League Pod, that's the only personal account I really have. At Keeper League Pod on all the other platforms, your TikToks, your Instagrams, your Facebooks, your YouTubes, whatever. We're on all of them, so you can find us there. And then keeperleaguepod.com.au is the website. So, yeah, stay tuned for the rankings that are coming out this week. I've actually got a Supercoach ranking spreadsheet coming out tomorrow, and it's kind of co-designed with Stevie Fizz. Just, I don't play Supercoach, but I wanted to put something together for the Supercoach players out there. So I just said, what are the stuff you look at when you're looking at players and what stats and numbers and things like that? So I put a spreadsheet, yeah, used his feedback and put a spreadsheet together to kind of help the Supercoach players find their next kind of guns and things like that, and then also rank their players from there. So that's coming out. Should be tomorrow, whatever day this comes out. But yeah, it'll be out by the time this comes out. So,
Day after the day. You just don't know. Yeah, just exactly. Go to the Keeper League podcast.
Just have a look. Site. Keep pumping those, you know, those viewership numbers up. It's good for my Google ranking, so it doesn't matter. I'll keep you on your toes.
Keep flying in there. If you missed any of that, we've popped all the details in the description of this episode, mate. Love talking fantasy footy with you. It's a pleasure to have you back on the 50 Most Relevant, man.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, always good fun.
If you want to go and check out the article about Nzaia and all the other players we've revealed thus far in the 50 Most Relevant, you can go and check them out at coachespanel.tv. There's been a brand new article dropping every single day of 2024, as well as this podcast. You can go and check it out wherever you get your audio podcast from. Leave a 5-star rating and review. If you leave a little review in there, we might even read you out as a little thank you at the end of one of these podcast episodes as a little shout out. So jump in there and get involved. And you can follow us across all your social media handles, much like some of the great stuff we've just told you about, where you can find Hef and the Keeper League podcast. You can find in the description of this podcast, wherever you're watching or you're checking it out. So in 30 seconds, I've got a little clue about who's next. But if you are loving the Coaches Panel, jump on over and support us by becoming a Patreon for as little as $2 a month. You can enter in, or you can jump up to that premium tier at $10 a month. Every single tier helps make a difference and support the Coaches Panel, but also gives you great different levels of rewards, hidden groups, access to a bunch of other content, whether it be the keeper rankings, draft rankings, some strategy stuff that's coming soon, and year-round conversations with the fantasy community. All those details are in the description of this episode. Oh, and lastly, if you're watching this on YouTube, where do you rank Nzaia in your draft rankings? If you're doing a keeper league ranking, Hef's given you a couple. Comment below and let us know, if you are watching this on YouTube, where you would pick Nzaia in a brand new keeper league. So who's next in the 50 most relevant? Some of these clues are a little bit cryptic. Some of them are a little bit easy. So let me give you one that's both. Tomorrow, we stay at the same club. We're talking about a Saint. So at first you go, oh, that's easy. It's one of the Jacks. Steele. Sinclair. Done. And then you start to think, well, hang on a second. Then they had Rowan Marshall, one of the best rucks. Maybe it's him. And then MJ loves an odd clue. maybe there's some subtle messaging he's trying to let us know, that with the Keeper League pod and then talking about a St Kilda player, that maybe they did a film clip about a particular player that was a Carlton player and is now a St Kilda player. And maybe this is just a grand scheme to talk about Paddy Dow and the 50 most relevant. Which of those things are true? We will talk about a St Kilda player tomorrow in the 50 most relevant.